Now, generally, English kings with the name Henry were quite successful in their own times, have been well regarded by historians, and to be honest, probably feature far too prominently in the popular psyche. But the exception to this, and therefore I'm proud to talk of him, is Henry VI. To what extent were the Wars of the Roses caused by the weak kingship of Henry VI? The classic response is that he was inadequate. But, of course, the main thing is that he went mad. It's pretty obvious that mad kings are going to be ineffective, since their incapacity leads to a struggle between factions to gain control of the king and hence of royal authority. And therefore we have a civil war between Yorkists and Lancastrians and the deposition of Henry in 1461. Now, the issue of insanity has let Henry off the hook a bit in terms of personal culpability. It's all the fault of having a mad grandfather, Charles VI of France, whose insanity encouraged a civil war in France in the early 15th century, which was exploited by Henry VI's own father, Henry V, and which goes a long way, by the way, in explaining Henry V's great victories. Henry V, of course, is totally marvellous, but he was helped by the fact that the French were so divided between themselves that it made it much easier to gain victories compared with, say, in the time of Edward III. But, of course, those victories of Henry V were reversed under Henry VI. Henry VI's first bout of madness was apparently in response to the news in July 1453 that the English had been completely driven out of all their French possessions save for Calais, thereby ruining his father's legacy. And when I gave a talk on the links between the Hundred Years' War and the Wars of the Roses at Bootham School in York, to the HA branch in York, a student from York St John came up to me, a chap called Carl Walters, and suggested that Henry's symptoms were very similar to those of post-traumatic stress disorder. He'd been in Afghanistan, and he said the sorts of things I was talking about were typical of that. And I think this is important for us. If it's true that Henry fell on the floor when the news came in of this terrible defeat and of the death in battle of the great English commander John Talbot, the Earl of Shrewsbury, perhaps we are seeing a trauma here that does explain a lot. Perhaps, therefore, this idea should be pursued more fully. But the common portrayal by modern historians of Henry VI, even before the onset of madness, is that he was hapless, unable to keep law and order, and already been manipulated by nobles and courtiers, thereby encouraging factions which subsequently led to civil war. Now, what I'm going to do today is argue a revisionist view of this, that Henry's active kingship, that he knew what he was doing, or perhaps he didn't know what he was doing, but he did it anyway, was a major cause of the Wars of the Roses. And I'm going to focus particularly on 1447 as a turning point. It was in this year that he had his uncle and the heir to the throne, Humphrey, Duke of Gloucester, arrested for treason during a parliament at Bury St Edmunds. Humphrey may have died from a heart attack brought on by shock, but he could well have been murdered by the king's command. But before I go into this, I think you need a few basic facts about Henry VI, sort of claims to fame. My thanks here to Ralph Griffiths, the retired professor of history at Swansea University and a great friend to the HA, who wrote a huge study of the reign in 1981. He makes some of the same comments. I've added a few to his, but they're inspired by what he said. Henry was the youngest ever king of England, acceding to the throne at 9 months old on the 1st of September 1422 at the premature death of his father, Henry V, who died in the castle of Vincennes on the 31st of August. He is the only king of England ever to have been crowned king of France, and that was just after his 10th birthday in Notre Dame in Paris in 1431. Of course, part of the claim to the throne after the Treaty of Troyes of 1420 that made Henry V heir to the French throne. He didn't live long enough for that to happen. But I can add into this that just before this, Henry VI was present in Rouen throughout the trial of Joan of Arc. That's a fact that never gets into the history books, but I think was deliberate. The idea was to show a pious, innocent youth sort of juxtaposed against a teenager who was possessed by the devil. He is the founder of two of England's best known and prestigious educational establishments, Eton College, close to his own castle of Windsor, where he'd been born in 1421. He was often known as Henry of Windsor, born on St. Nicholas Day, and King's College, Cambridge, which was actually originally dedicated to his name saint, or his day saint, St. Nicholas. It's the third longest reign since the Norman Conquest, 39 years, but actually it's longer than that. He actually ruled twice, 1422 to 61, and then, although the Lancastrians lost the first phase of the Wars of the Roses, and he was eventually captured in the north of England in 1464 and put in the Tower, he was readapted to the throne in 1470 when the Earl of Warwick, Warwick the Kingmaker, you can see why he gets that name, previously supporting the Yorkist, Edward IV, put Henry back on the throne, very much, of course, as a puppet at that stage, and he ruled for about a year before Warwick lost a battle and Henry was himself murdered in the Tower. Now, this is also interesting that the word readaption that I've mentioned is apparently, linguists tell me, the only known use of that term. It seems to be a term invented for the reselection, if you like, of Henry as king in 1470. He was buried twice. First of all, he was put into Chertsey Abbey, forgotten about. But Richard III, and we all know this proves he was a goodie, had Henry VI reburied in Windsor in 1484. There are parallels here with Henry V's reburial of Richard II in 1413. Of course, Richard had been deposed by Henry V's own father, Henry IV, in 1399. And Henry VI is also a would-be saint. At the end of Richard III's reign in January 1485, a book was produced by John Blackman, a compilation of the meekness and good life of King Henry VI. Now, Blackman was not a wholly independent witness of this good life. He was a fellow of Eton from 1443, and he was then warden of King's College, Cambridge, from 1452 to 7. But this book fell on deaf ears in the last few months of Richard III's reign, but it was taken up by Henry VII, who very much encouraged the idea that he was Henry VI there, and the Yorkists should just be sort of airbrushed out of history. And if you see Shakespeare's play, Henry VI, it's part three, you'll see in there where Henry VI selects Henry Tudor as, you know, the boy who will take forward the future. So it became very much an idea in the mythology of the coming of the Tudors. There were attempts to canonise Henry as well, of course, as a martyr there. And there is still a Henry VI society alive today, and which places a wreath on his tomb slab at Windsor every year. It's not as active in the Richard III society, of course, in trying to redeem the reputation of a king. So Henry VI remains the mad king, if not, I hope you've picked up now, a bit of a sad king as well, in all meanings of that word. But should we just write him off as a hapless victim, or is there more to him? Just to make sure everybody knows the family tree here, we've got Edward III, various sons, I've cut some of them out here, but the line goes down here, the usurpation here, goes down through here. That's where we are with Henry VI, there's his uncle there. And I'm going to be talking about this illegitimate line down here. And there we've got Richard, Duke of York, it's because his son was Edward IV, the sort of collateral line that had a claim to the throne.